have the individual Beatles tonight with Ken Gehringer, and we're talking basically about John Lennon. Ken, how are you?
Hi, Jerry. It's great to be back here.
It's always good to have you on the air. How's the book tour doing?
Oh, we're doing great. We've been out about a month now, and it's pretty wild. We're actually on a 60-city, 100-stop book tour. And last week we were in Chicago. This week we're in Minnesota.
Well,
and things are going great with the book, Jerry.
Good, good. Of course, the name of the book, folks, is Nobody Told Me, and it's a great book. Got a lot of inside information there, not only about John Lennon, but about the music business in general.
But, you know, it's John Lennon's 62nd birthday coming up.
October 9th.
The 9th, yes.
I was going to ask you how old he was going to be. 62, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And do you know how old Yoko is now?
Well, she's older than him, right?
Yeah.
67?
Up.
69?
The big 70.
You're kidding me. she was an older woman.
No wonder. Senior citizen.
Well, you know, your book intimates several times where she's pretty well bossing John around a little bit. No wonder.
Yeah, she was a control freak.
And so maybe there was a little maternal instinct or something going on there. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. He was crazy about her.
He was.
It was more like be a little boy crazy about his mother, mm-hmm. the mother John never had. And, you know, if Yoko wrote a song or Yoko had an art project, John would just get totally wrapped up in it. He would bring in arrangers, producers, he would bring out promoters, anything for her. But, you know, what was fascinating in their relationship was that she never really cared about anything that he did.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, we were talking about that, and she really didn't get interested in doing this record with these people until they said, hey, we're going to do something with you.
Quite the opposite. When she heard John was going into the studio, she jumped on the bandwagon. Not only did she jump on the bandwagon, but without John even knowing it, she gave Jack Douglas a box of reels. John gave Jack a single cassette that he recorded in Bermuda, and Yoko gave him a box full of these reels that were just hours and hours of her howling and screaming. They were demos that she did with the Elephant's Memory Band.
Mm. And, I was thinking in terms of if he's offered more money by other people, but Yoko wasn't going to be included in the project like this time.
Oh, well, the record companies, you know, when they heard the news that John was going back into the studio, they all wanted, you know, he wasn't on a label. It was like an open market.
Mm-hmm.
So they all wanted in, and they came to the studio, and one by one, Yoko would have them leave. She'd tell the producer, Jack Douglas, to go out and ask them to leave. Some of them were Ahmet Erdogan from Atlantic Records. Jack Douglas, who was a record producer, had to go out there and say, Ahmet, no one's interested in talking to you. And the reason she did this was because they all came to sign John Lennon. They had no interest in signing John and Yoko. But there was one producer, there was one president of a record label that was very smart. He came in and he talked to Yoko. He was David Geffen. What he did is he said to Yoko, Yoko, if you and John sign this contract, I won't be getting one artist, but I'll be getting two. And that's all she needed to hear.
Well, did Geffen have some inside knowledge on how to deal with with Yoko and John, or was he just lucky?
Yeah, he treated Yoko like she was the artist.
Yeah, I mean...
And all the business was done between him and Yoko, and you know, none of the other record companies would do that.
Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about your project here? You have an interesting cassette out there, too.
Yeah, well, you know, my book, Nobody Told Me, is the first book that has an actual soundtrack to the book. It actually is from Basement Band to Jack and the John Lennon Session. And it starts off with me, with my first record production. I was a drummer in a band with Bob Marley's sister at the time Bob died.
Reggae.
Yep. It was called, the band was the Reggae Rockers, and
mm-hmm.
when Bob died, there was a missing will, and the family went through just a real big hardship. And Pearl, Bob's sister, wrote a song to his mother called Sweet Mama. And I recorded that in New York with another song called Reaganomics. It was the era of Ronald Reagan.
Well, I started to say that was a neat play on the titles at the time.
Yeah, in response to Reaganomics, I wrote a song called Reaganomics. And that was my second production, my second record that I produced. And both of those, that's where it starts. So that and Basement Jams, which are just incredible jams of the time, of the late 60s, early 70s. And then it goes through my work with Jack Douglas, all the way to ending with some more Basement Jams.
Now, when they buy the book, they get the cassette with it?
Yeah, it's the actual first time a book has a musical soundtrack, and you'll be reading about all the songs in the book. So it's kind of charming to have that.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. And no wonder your book review tour is going well and everything, because you have something unique out there.
Well, something's really surprised me. I'm getting a lot of people out at each stop. I'm actually doing 100 stops, 60 cities. But what really surprises me is the amount of young people that are coming out to buy this book. Something's going on underground with Nobody Told Me, and young people want to buy it. And the young people that are buying it are loving what I wrote about the 60s.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I've had the experience here on the request line the last couple of weeks. I've had several 20-somethings, I'm talking about younger somethings, 22, 23, 24-year-old people, calling up and requesting Beatles songs.
Well, yeah, it's an amazing movement that's happening with music. Isn't that great?
Yeah, it's interesting. And you kind of wonder what turned them on.
Wow, that's an incredible thing. But with what's going on with me is that movie producers have jumped on. I've been called by two movie producers who say that I've captured something that Hollywood could never capture. And I've got one agent who's shopping the book now, and he feels that we're pretty close to getting a deal.
Fantastic. Now, you got to stay in touch with us when you get that movie deal. If you can still talk to me, let me know.
Well, I've already got the seat. I've already got the soundtrack for the movie.
Oh, do you?
For the CD. Yes.
Is that thinking ahead?
Well, I hope so. I'd like to have as much control in creating my youth as possible.
Uh-huh. Now we know why you recognized Yoko Ono for what she was. Yeah, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
Well, it's funny because prior to her being 40 years old, John was just very insecure about his life, about his music, and he just hated dealing with the outside world. But at 40 years old, he was back in the studio, and he was making music, and Double Fantasy was just coming out better than he could have even imagined, and he was feeling great about it. He was gaining back his confidence, but most importantly, he was openly talking about leaving Yoko. And this is something here's something that a lot of people don't know. Yoko has always portrayed herself as the one with psychic powers. And John was always portrayed as this guy, this working class hero. But in reality, it was John who had the powers. He used to know things, and he could feel things in people. And between the two of them, Yoko had a lot of psychic friends and people she went to, but John was the psychic one. And he was coming into being again. And I think that with his confidence, we would have seen a John Lennon like the world has never seen before. He wanted to produce records. He was sitting by the board during the making of Double Fantasy. For the first time, he was sitting next to Jack, and he was actually producing. And they were talking about buying a studio in Manhattan, and it would have been John Lennon's studio, and he wanted to produce other artists. First of all, he wanted to produce a Ringo album. John Lennon loved Ringo like a brother, not just like a bandmate. He loved all of his Beatle bandmates. But he was always concerned about Ringo's career. Like, he used to write songs for Ringo. Now, when John decided to go back into the studio, he gave our record producer, Jack Douglas, a cassette tape with 12 songs on it. John played acoustic guitar, and John's assistant, Fred Seaman, played hand claps and bongos. Now, on this cassette, Jerry, John earmarked a song that he wrote for Ringo. He goes, "This one's for Richard Starkey, formerly late of the Beatles. This one's for Ringo. Now, this one's got to be for Ringo."
Well, where was that done, Ken? Do you know?
That was done in Bermuda,
uh-huh,
at John's house. the song that he was working on, which he planned on giving to Ringo, and he actually did demos on this song at Record Plant, was Nobody Told Me. That's the name of my book.
Yes.
What's fascinating about that is after John died, Jack and I met with Ringo's manager, and we wanted to, well, Jack wanted to produce the Ringo album that him and John planned on producing. Now, Ringo said he couldn't do anything for at least another year, so we were told to wait.
What was the reason for that, Ken?
Well, it was too soon. He didn't want to even hear
it. It was an emotional reason.
Totally emotional reasons. He didn't want to go near as of yet. But everything was on hold. But Yoko had the demos that John did at Record Plant. And Yoko subsequently put that out on a second album that she put out on Polygram Records called Milk and Honey. So that killed that one.
Mm-hmm. Yoko seems to be the fly in the ointment all along here.
Well, she's very powerful. I met with her in the 90s, and out of that meeting, I was able to get a copy of John's demo that he did, Beautiful Boy. And at the time, Sean had never heard that. So it was kind of a nice meeting.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I'm sure. Yeah, you probably still think about that often.
Yeah. Well, while John was at a rehearsal for his famous 1972 New York City concert, he was explaining a part to a keyboard player of the Elephant Memory Band, and he exclaims, "You got to go down on it."
The Elephant Memory Band is that one that Yoko Ono recorded with, right?
Yes. But John, it was also the John Lennon Band in the early 70s.
Okay.
That's who she did those demos with.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, John goes, "Use your left," to the musician. "It's got to be simple. Otherwise, Paul couldn't have played it. He can only play basics. Now, Jerry, your audience can decide for themselves what that means."
Well, it doesn't have to be too bad. It may be just realistic thinking by John.
I don't make a comment on that one.
Would you describe John Lennon as a perfectionist? Of course he was, but I mean... I mean, they took a lot of time recording a lot of tracks. They were looking for perfection, don't you think?
Not only was he a perfectionist, but when he went in, even on his demos, he knew exactly what he wanted. You know, there was, this guy just knew everything, and he knew about what he didn't want. John was insecure about his voice. So, I mean, this is amazing. Even in his house in Bermuda, he used to do what's called doubling his voice.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't have studio equipment in his house in Bermuda. So he used to take two boom boxes and record on one, and then with that recording, go to another boom box with it and record on that boom box with the other boom box playing, so he could actually double his voice.
Yeah, that's an old trick they used to use on people like Annette Funicello, people to have weak voices. He didn't really need that.
No, he had a beautiful voice, but it's funny, you would think that maybe you could understand that in the studio because other people would be around, but in his living room have to double his voice? Come on.
Well, it tells you something about all of us, even if you're an icon. You still, you know, have to do it certain ways, and you still have doubts about certain things.
Yes, but John was an amazing rhythm guitar player. He and anything with rhythm, he was just simply amazing. When he used to play piano on different songs on his demos, I mean, just amazing rhythm. And his demos sound like records. They sound like products, finished products. There were songs from the beginning.
Now, we're talking with Ken Geringer here, and your book, Nobody Told Me, is doing very well, and you're in the midst of this book tour, and you're going up to Minnesota next. At least you're going in October when it's not too bad.
It's great here, you know, but I got to say something. The Minnesotans right now are very excited about the Twins. You know what's happening with them.
Oh, yeah. And they, you know, everybody said, well, the Twins can't be competitive. And look, hey, they're there.
This is a great tour. It's actually a Barnes & Noble and Borders book tour. So, you know, I got to tell you, I'm seeing the best parking lots in America.
I understand. Hey, we'll stay in touch with you. Always a joy to talk to you, and we'll keep us surprised with this movie deal.
Thank you, Jerry. Yes, I'll be calling in.
Who are we going to get to play John Lennon?
Oh, God. Who's going to play me?
We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Talk to you later.